when you talk to other people who went there, there's a certain shared level of sort of survivor's respect. Many of the people you talk to who grew up in New Jersey, laughing about Action Park, if you ask them on a basic level, do you think the way you grew up was healthy for a kid? They'll say no. We laugh about it, because what else are we gonna do? But we don't think it was healthy. Then we felt like we were on our own. We felt like the world was an unsafe place. But it's what we got, so fuck you.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Keeps. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on? I don't see you.
I have a little story for you.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Made a lifestyle purchase.
From Spencer's. You went to Spencer's. Yes.
You fellas may remember a couple of years ago when we decided to get a new mattress and we went through a great deal of mattress research.
Mm-hmm.
I compiled a spreadsheet with Vorm, the value over replacement mattresses, and eventually we settled on the Lisa. And it was okay. The Lisa was okay. It worked for like a year and a half or so. And then it turned into a marshmallow. And
you mean so, you just sort of sank into it?
Yeah, it was no support. Yeah. And this coincided with my wife becoming really getting into firm mattresses, which is great because I have always wanted firm.
Yep, that's me.
And so the Lisa was our compromise mattress, which was, you know, like sort of medium right there. And so when once she said, "Boy, you know, I really wish we had a firmer mattress," I was like, "Doo, doo, doo." Run to the computer, and I started the Vorms again.
Great sound effects, by the way.
And so you got a Sleep Number bed, so you could each set it to your preferred side.
You know what number mine is, don't you?
69.
Yeah, very good, buddy. how did you know that? How did you know?
It's not, no. There's really only one number it could be, frankly, Vic.
Like, I don't even know how comfortable it is, but I would purposely make that my number.
Okay. I mean, just for the shtick, just so you could introduce yourself.
That's right. As,
did you know that I have a Sleep Number bed? 69. Yeah. There wouldn't even be like a setup or a punchline. You just go up to homeless people, be like, "Have you heard about my Sleep Number bed?"
How about you? I'm sure you haven't heard yet. Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry, JVL.
Yeah, sorry.
So I went looking to see what the absolute firmest mattress that you could legally buy in the United States was. And I found a mattress. Now, the mattress review universe rates mattresses on a scale of 1 to 10 for firmness. And a medium firm mattress is typically thought to be about a 6.5. A very firm mattress is typically thought to be about a 7.5. Mm. And I found a mattress that was double-sided. One side...
A mattress.
Right, a mattress. On one side, there was a tiny bit of memory foam so that it was a gooey 8.5. But on the other side, it went all the way to 9.5.
So on the other side is like bamboo mat.
Would you like to know what the name of this mattress is?
What?
The plank.
What is it made of that makes it so hard?
It is foam. It is a high density foam. And we got it. And I love it. But here's the thing. So here's the whole thing I wanted to talk to you guys about this is they say, you know, so you have 120 days to decide whether or not you want to keep it. And if you decide you don't want it, they say, you know, please call us first, though, and tell us what the problem is. And maybe we'll be able to send you some materials to get it customized to your fit. You know, and so if you need it to be a little bit softer, we could send you a little layer of memory foam, a topper, as they call it in the industry. And that's maybe what most people worry about with the plank is that it might be a little too hard. They might need a little. What I wanted to know is, if I were to call them up and say, look, I really like this 9.5, but is there anything you could do to make it a little firmer? What do? They just send me a sheet of plywood?
I was going to say, I mean, you could, you know, it's you're like LBJ. Remember LBJ in the White House, the shower? He had it specially designed. So it's like the shower pressure. It was like, it's like, as he said, for circus elephants, you know, it's like really, it's like in Seinfeld, you know, they went to get the Serbian shower heads. That's what you're looking for mattresses.
It is great.
They just come and they put a layer of concrete on top. They back the mixing truck right up to your window and it just splashes in through the, and they, you know, level it off.
So your wife is fine with this, JVL?
She loves it. Oh. She loves it. And she has also graduated up like a big girl to a flat pillow. So anyway, that's my story. Sonny, what is up with you in Tejas?
Before we started recording, I was talking to Vic about the Diet Dr. Pepper I was drinking and how much I loved it. And Vic said, you know, this is like the official drink of Texas, right? Dr. Pepper is. And it is, but I was a fan before moving here. I've always been a Dr. Pepper.
Is it really like everywhere though in Texas?
But this is like the great thing is that, you know, most places, if you go to a restaurant and you want to get a fountain soda, your diet options are like, it's like Diet Coke. That's what you can drink, right? Then that's the only diet soda that they have. But lots of places, I won't say all places, but lots of places in Texas also have Diet Dr. Pepper, which is awesome.
That's nice.
Because I used to get that
in the office.
I would drink a 12 pack every 2 days in the office. You know, that and the Diet Sunkist. Nobody else drank the diet.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there are so many like lumps of cancer chemicals in my stomach.
Right, because you're fooling your body.
What happens in Texas if you go someplace and ask for a Diet Mr. Pibb?
I don't know. I assume you get murdered.
Dr. Pepper, the counter to Dr. It's like Sprite and 7-Up. I get that.
Yeah, Coke, Mr. Pibb.
Mr. Pibb is the answer to Dr. Pepper.
Mr. Pibb is the Dr. Pepper knockoff that Pepsi does or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, knockoff whatevers, but the Kroger is always fully stocked with not just Dr. Pepper and Diet Dr. Pepper. There's also a Dr. Pepper cream.
Ooh, like a vanilla, like a cream soda.
It's like Dr. Pepper, but like also vanilla soda.
I've never had it. Are there other flavors of Dr. Pepper? That's what
I thought. There's cherry Dr. Pepper. There's all sorts of Dr. Pepper.
We up here.
You people in the north.
We see diet and regular.
You people up in Virginia.
Below the Mason-Dixon line.
Victorino, what are the odds that I could entice you to sing the Dr. Pepper theme song from the 1980s?
Oh, he's a pepper, you're a pepper. I forget how it goes.
You're going to have to do this on your own.
Nice to be a Dr. Pepper too, or something like that. I can't remember, but the guy who used to be the star of that commercial, he went on to do two movies. One was Midnight Madness with a very young Michael J. Fox, which is a fantastic scavenger hunt movie that took place in California called Midnight Madness with different groups going after the same stuff. Pee Wee Herman's in that movie.
What is a scavenger hunt movie? That is a genre I don't understand.
There was the misfit gangs and I think the jock gangs and then the nerds and then they were all after the same things. And then some guy had created a guy with $1 million, whatever it is. And if you find this thing, the ultimate scavenger, it was like the ultimate scavenger hunt that an eccentric millionaire put together. And I think the final clue was at the Bonaventure Hotel. And you could only see it by going up the elevator because it was in the formation of the seats. The chairs were in the formation of what room number it was. It's a really great movie, Midnight Madness. And then the guy, why do I think his name is David? He went on to be, he was an American Werewolf in London. But he got to start doing the Dr. Pepper commercial. I know John Podhoretz is screaming his name right now. It's driving him crazy. David something, I think. Okay. Yes, that's all. That's all.
Victorino, what's up with you there, big guy?
I'm feeling a little bloated and fiery because we had Chinese food today, right? And I ordered it from Peter Chang's, not P.F. Chang's, which is also very nice. More fusion, that is. The F is Fleming. But no, Peter Chang's, which is really great, authentic Szechuan here in Arlington. And, you know, you get the normal things for the kids. My wife, who, you know, is white, so she's not going to handle the spicy stuff, you know, so she gets the
racist. Racist.
So we got pork fried rice, the pan fried dumplings, shrimp dumplings. But then I always want to get an entree. And you sometimes there's something that's, you know, that my wife and I will like, that she'll like, you know, some sort of a sweet and sour chicken dish or some sort of a golden mountain, whatever it is. But this time I just went for something that I knew was probably going to be mostly for me. And it was, in fact, 80% me and 20% her. And it was basil chicken. But on the menu, it had the three pepper symbols.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And as soon as I saw that, I said, I had to get it because I'm like one of these people that whenever I see that, it's like a dare. It's a taunt. Like because sometimes, you know, they'll say, oh, you don't want it. You know, it's too spicy. I'm like, well, what do you think I am? You know, of course I'm going to get it. Or sometimes a waiter will say, you know, oh, you can handle it. And I'm not going to say no. So I'm going to get it either way. I've been to Peter Ching's with Dan Halper, our friend, and he likes the ghost pepper beef. That's four peppers, four pepper symbols.
Too many peppers.
That's insane. But I get it too, because it's like a mixture of pain and pleasure. If you're into that sort of thing. So I got
question.
Yes, Sonny. Yes.
Vic, have you ever gotten into or
you know, I'm
into
actually
the...
sitting on a toilet right now. You can't tell, by the way.
Have you ever that's what that noise was. Have you ever just a jet engine in the background?
Yeah, every time I cough. Yes,
adaptive
Sonny.
Noise reduction.
Did you ever get into the world of like competitive spiciness? Like,
I've had some really insane like pepper sauces. I've eaten peppers too, but not for the competition though.
Yeah, but I mean, I not even really for competition. I had friends in college who would go and buy just the most insanely spicy things, and like there, you know, there's a whole scale, the Scoville.
Yeah, yeah, that's
units,
right. The Scoville,
right?
Units. Yeah, that's right.
And like they would just put like toothpicks in them and like taste them,
like a morsel.
Yeah, just like a little, because it's not like a sauce. It's an ingredient. Mm-hmm. You put like a drop in something mm-hmm. to make mm-hmm. it super spicy, right?
Oh my God.
I have it's a fascinating. You should write a piece about that sometime, yeah, because it's a weirdly fascinating little
Carolina Reaper
subunit of the food and beverage industry.
Ghost
that I
pepper,
think
I agree. Ghost pepper, I'm burping right now. Ghost pepper has already been surpassed by like the Carolina Reaper and these other ones. I remember down in Grand Cayman, the naturally growing peppers, the Scotch Bonnet, and man, a little goes, I mean, you know, sweating. So I had the basil chicken today, which had, you know, just a lot of, I think it was mostly just jalapenos and stuff, but you know, they chop it in there, but I sweat. And actually Kate actually saw a bead of sweat come down the side of my face as I was eating this thing. But again, I can't say no, but here I am. So I just have to remember to take Tums. But again, it's just one of these situations where, you know, if a waiter, you know, sort of taunts you with it, then I'm going to say yes. I can't say no to that. Also, if it's like a young waitress, you know, I'm going to say yes to that too.
Well, obviously. Obviously.
Speaking of teenagers with amazing powers, The New Mutants took in $12.5 million, followed by Unhinged with $6.4 million. And in third place, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge on the Run, with $2 million. Box office thoughts. We're actually going to be talking about the SpongeBob movie. Yeah, that's what we're doing today.
I mean, really box office thoughts that matter are Tenet. Right? The entire industry is holding its breath.
Yeah, nobody really seems to have any idea. I mean, Warner Brothers hasn't said. I talked to a guy today who suggested that the number for the early access screenings was something like $20 million over the 3 days, which would be good, considering that New York, LA, San Francisco, still like 15 of the top 30 markets are all still closed. But yeah, I mean, I like everyone is just kind of curious to see what happens with Tenet. You know, the The fact that New York City theaters are still closed is something of a mystery to people at this point, given that they have, you know, started opening up gyms and all sorts of other stuff.
And New Jersey has decided finally,
New Jersey is opening this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think Maryland is opening this weekend. I believe several cities in California, not all of California, but like San Francisco, San Diego are opening.
One part is that the state allows it, and the second part is the chains have to decide once they know they can. I wasn't sure what happened there.
I thought for a while that the chains would kind of be a little more cautious about, like, just because we have the okay to open, that does not mean we will necessarily open, but they're just going for it everywhere. I mean, everywhere that is open, they're just throwing the doors open. It's an interesting and weird time. The New Mutants grossing $12 million or whatever this weekend is kind of a, you know, it's a good sign because it's more than Unhinged made. It's, you know, whatever. And this is a movie that was going to get dumped anyway. So
this is the movie that the AV Club said it's not worth the risk.
Oh, yeah. Dicks.
Well, I mean,
is a thing I could actually do 20 minutes of just ranting about this, but the short version is, you know, so the AV Club wrote this really kind of douchey letter saying, like, we're not going to review the New Mutants because the studio didn't have a press screening and they won't send us a link to review it. And we would have to go see it with normal people in the theaters. And look, we'll go to a theater if it's just other critics. You know, we'll go to a press screening where it's just the other critics because, you know, those are better movie watchers. It's safer to be in a theater with somebody who's Rotten Tomatoes certified. They can't get COVID. They can't be super spreaders. But you go out with the plebs. You go out with the disgusting normal people. And you're just going to get sick. And I get it.
That sounds fair to me.
In a certain sense, I get it. Except for the fact that I have been in 100 million screenings with critics, and they are disgusting pigs. They are disgusting pigs. And the idea that, you know, these critics are going to be, you know, super, super conscious about making sure they keep their masks on, that they're not going to, you know, get any concessions or any, well, they probably won't get any concessions now because it'll be frowned upon, but it was a weirdly clarifying moment, I think, to a lot of people, not me, because I have, like, long known that critics are kind of insufferable in their self-regard. But we will go to the theaters, but we won't go with the normal public. And I'm just like, man, I went to a showing of the New Mutants on Friday afternoon that had four people in it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were all wearing their masks. And it was totally fine.
Was it worth the risk?
It had seven people in it. It had seven people in it, but there was a family, a mother and two young children. And they left after about 30 minutes when it turns out that the main character's gay. There's not good for the kids.
You mean is it the guy from Stranger Things?
No, it's Maisie Williams, the girl from Game of Thrones, and the native girl who is the lead character in this. Was it worth risking my life to see the New Mutants? Yes, absolutely it was, because it's not really that much of a risk. It's, all this shit is so overblown.
I was going to say, you know, but it would suck. Imagine if you got, you know, COVID from seeing, you know, SpongeBob. You know?
If I got it from seeing Tenet, it was worth it. If I got it from seeing SpongeBob. The New Mutants, it was not worth it.
Not sponge-worthy.
I have a
JVL Tenet
question.
Sure. I've seen Tenet, by the way. You want me to talk about Tenet?
No. I want to talk a public service, a very serious question about Tenet.
Sure.
If you are offered the choice to see Tenet at a Dolby cinema theater or on an IMAX screen, Not the real IMAX, but the LIMAX. So the version of IMAX.
Multiplex
IMAX.
What do you mean?
Which of those is preferable, Sonny?
Hold on. Before he answers that, what do you mean not the real IMAX? Because I'm seeing it at an IMAX on Sunday.
To answer Vic's question first, the difference between IMAX and LIMAX is a thing that I used to be more hung up on than I am now. So IMAX, you know, IMAX is like when you think of the original IMAX, it's like the big air and space museum whatever. Right. And then there's the multiplex IMAX, which are essentially just like bigger screens, but not like the huge kind of football field size screens, right? But I will say that the decrease in quality in the average screening room in a multiplex theater combined with the absolute uniformity of quality in an IMAX branded auditorium has led me to like just abandon the LIMAX thing. I just go because I know that the picture is going to be in focus. It's going to be in the right aspect ratio. And the picture is going to be bright. I mean, those are like, I know that it's going to be better than an average theater in the multiplex. To answer your question, JVL, if I was forced to choose between those two options, I would probably take the IMAX. I have had more issues in Dolby branded premium large formats theaters than I have in IMAX branded premium format theaters. I am like a total shill for IMAX at this point.
So it is worth the trade-off of screen size for contrast, dark contrast, because I think that's what you get better in the Dolby. The Dolby projector is giving you better dark contrast.
At least that's what they tout when I went to see Unhinged. That's what the first thing they showed you was the difference.
Yeah, they make a very big deal about their ultra dark blacks. I don't know which projector puts out more, you know, lumens or whatever. I don't know what the actual the numbers are, but I'm just saying anecdotally from experience, I've had more problems in Dolby branded, like the Dolby Atmos at AMC Georgetown, the Dolby in AMC Hoffman. I've had more problems with those theaters than I ever have with an IMAX, which always has like a pretty standard and high level of projection quality.
Okay. Well, then I will, once my KN95 Chinese knockoff masks are delivered, I will be going to see the LIMAX version.
You're gonna wear the KN95s instead of the N95s that you ordered? Didn't you order N95s?
If the N95s get here at the same time, I will order an N95. I only ordered a couple N95s. I ordered like 200 KN95s.
I'm just wearing the regular surgical, the mask, you know?
Yeah. No, well, that's good for you. Good luck.
I've been wearing that everywhere. Haven't killed anyone yet. I'm going to... the IMAX with
super
laser.
Spreader.
That's right. I have no idea. I'm going to, what is IMAX with laser? Because that's what they offered at Tyson's, so I took it. Did I just fall for something?
No,
it was because it was like Dolby.
No. Without getting into too many details, there are different IMAX projectors. Oh. There's IMAX film. There's IMAX laser. Most of the multiplex IMAXs are IMAX laser.
Okay.
But there are still a handful of IMAX. I mean, like literally a handful. I think there's only three or four theaters left in the country that do IMAX film. I think I'm not 100% sure on that. So don't die if I get an angry.
Okay.
If the good people at IMAX are listening and would like to discuss this with me on my podcast, The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood, that would be fantastic.
Well, we are not actually discussing that quite yet because not everyone has seen it. However, I think all of us have seen a documentary on HBO Max, and that's what we're talking about today, about Action Park, known as Class Action Park. So, JVL, were you able to see it?
I was finally able to watch it on my computer.
Yeah,
what happened, JVL?
Yeah, what's going on there?
Well, so I went and signed myself up for HBO Max, and it turns out that HBO Max is not available to stream on either Amazon Fire devices or Roku devices. Now, between them, Amazon Fire, Roku make up, I believe, 75% of the entire streaming device market.
I think it may even be higher than that. I think it may be 80%.
Now, HBO Max was not launched over a weekend. This had been planned out by the good people at Time Warner and AT&T for something like 3 years. And to launch in a way that makes it impossible to watch it on the majority of things, which I just don't even understand how that can happen.
Now, as I told you, you realize that this is a function not so much of HBO / Warner Brothers, but Roku playing hardball with them. They are asking for more from HBO than they are asking from other content providers. They want they want like free content for their stuff. They want, you know, they want to make sure that all of the subscriptions come through the Roku channel rather than letting people buy directly through the app, which gives Roku all sorts of data about how people are using it, et cetera, et cetera. To the point that Warner like said, all right, fine, we'll do it that way, but you have to take a lesser cut of the subscriptions. We'll basically trade you money for data. And Roku said, no, we're not going to do that. So I don't have a ton of, I mean, obviously it sucks for people who want to watch HBO Max stuff through Roku, but I'm gonna you know, come down on the side of HBO Max on this one.
Well, this isn't about what's fair. It's about what you do to successfully launch a product. And if HBO Max would like to have a moral victory in which they say, we stood up to the meanies at Roku, that's fine, I guess. Although AT&T is, what, 50,000 times the size of Roku? I mean, Roku is a like $200 million business total, I think. Yeah, I mean, they should just buy Roku at that point. If it is them so cheesed off, they should just go out and buy the company. It's not that big.
I didn't have any problem watching it on my Apple TV.
Well, that's fine. It just strikes me as crazy to do that. And also, a lot of these gripes, you know, so what percentage of the signups are actually happening through the Roku TV app versus what I think most people do, which is they go through their browser, right? You buy the thing or do your subscription on your browser because it's easier to type. Your credit cards are stored. You're not trying to input your credit card in an annoying way. And then you do the little magic code where, you know, you pull up the Roku app on your TV and it says, go to hbomax.mytv/ and then
enter the
HBO Max. Right. Enter the 6-digit code and then bam, like you're just good to go. You're not monkeying around with passwords. I'd be shocked if this isn't how the majority of people do it. Yeah, but the answer is you pay the toll, right? If you are AT&T and you are launching the streaming service because you actually want to compete in the streaming wars, then whatever the toll is, you pay it.
I guess. I mean, I like you can't.
Well, they'll buy, you know, Roku once they unload DirecTV. Then they can get Roku. They have a little problem there on their hands, but that's what I did it because we have Verizon. So they give you that code and then suddenly
it was fine. You know, the truth is they use so much lousy grainy footage that I would have been annoyed
and animation
just have it contaminating my glorious 65-inch UHD screen.
The animation was sort of a shortcut for, you know, the urban legends part of, well, we'll get to that later on. How about a quick big boy review, somebody?
Come on, Class Action Park is a documentary about the water park / go-kart park / death trap that is the New Jersey Legend Action Park. It's kind of a weird documentary because on the one hand, it is couched as, let's listen to all of these like famous and semi-famous New Jersey, or like all these. I mean, there's like three like actors from New Jersey who were in this documentary. You know,
I didn't even know they were. I was wondering why they were choosing these people. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. So the one guy who had like the like members only jacket or whatever, like he's totally. It's not a members only jacket, but you know, he's an actor, and then there's an actress from, who's probably best known from Parks and Rec. She played like the local news person on Parks and Rec, whatever. Okay. But you, so you have these like semi-famous people talking about going to Action Park, and then you have people who worked at the park talking about working at Action Park and how it was like a den of, you know, iniquity for all the teens who worked there, and also a death trap for all the people who went there. And you had some like higher ups, and they're kind of talking about like this kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, yeah, it was dangerous, but we grew up. And then there's almost like a smash cut to like a woman whose kid died in the park, and she's crying, and her son who lived is there and he's crying. And it's like, oh crap, we're like having all this like kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge fun about this park, but people actually did die here. Like multiple people in the 15 years died at this park. And there's part of me when it's hard to say how much of this is intentional on the part of the documentary filmmakers and how much of it is just kind of like, you know, whatever. But there's a part of me that really thinks they're trying to have it both ways. They want us to really enjoy this idea of this freedom, this world of freedom where kids could just go and roam and hurt themselves. And, you know, it was. And then also like scold us for thinking like, oh yeah, look at this fun place. That's great. Like New Jersey, this is New Jersey right here. I just felt weird. I felt weird and squicky watching it. And you can watch documentaries where the documentarians do this on purpose. They make you feel bad and awkward. And maybe I just need them to hold my hand a little bit more and tell me what they think on this. But I really got the sense they were trying to have it both ways. They were trying to both like moralize and also like celebrate and revel in the disgustingness of this place. I don't know. What did you guys make of it?
JVL.
Victorino, you are the only one of the three of us who has been to Action
no,
Park.
No, I've never been correct? To Action Park.
Oh, you didn't never go? Been.
Because it's in Vernon. And anyone who lives in New Jersey, whenever you saw like the commercials, they would something they'd show you where Vernon is. You might as well be, you know, it's like right on near the border to going into New York State. Into New York State. So I mean, if you lived in Morristown, you know, Summit, I guess, you know, up there. Oh, great. You know, you can go up there and
Randolph.
Yeah, exactly.
Explain to somebody who doesn't understand the geography of New Jersey. How far were you from Vernon?
I'm telling you, Sonny, it's like Texas down here. It's up there. You know, it's I mean, it's like all. Texas.
It's
like
so, going it's nothing like that.
From like Waco
like
to going from Waco, let's say Waco to like or El Paso to San Antonio, right? Mm-hmm. Somewhere or Galveston on the coast, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing, like Vernon from Tom's River.
Tom's River to Vernon is an hour 45, Sonny.
Okay.
The reason it's a long way is because Tom's River to Six Flags Great Adventure is 30 minutes.
Yes. That's right. It's in Jackson. So I always thought that there must have been some geographical divide. But I think, you know, a lot of New Yorkers also went down to Great Adventure. The takeaway for me, and this I'd like to know from JVLs too, as fellow New Jerseyans here, I had no idea, you know, when you grow up, you see the commercials for Action Park, and I just figure, okay, well, that's Great Adventure for North Jersey, but we don't go there because it's really far up there, and Great Adventures is fine. After watching the documentary, I had no idea that Action Park was the poor man's Great Adventure. It makes Great Adventure look like Epcot, you know, and I mean, based on the documentary. And so, you know, I mean, everything was extremely unsafe. I mean, obviously, you know, there was elements of that at Great Adventure, but it's part of the larger Six Flags Corporation, JVL.
Yeah. So I knew of the legend of Action Park because Action Park was something that, you know, you knew somebody whose brother's cousin's girlfriend had gone to Action Park and gotten jacked up. And we would talk about it as the Action Park is the evil twin of Great Adventure, which people should understand is a big deal because died at Great Adventure.
Oh my gosh.
Great Adventure was an absolute death trap. And so for Action Park to be the evil twin of Great Adventure was really saying something. I didn't.
Is Great Adventure a Six Flags?
Yes.
Yes. So like Six Flags over Texas.
And it was still a death trap?
Accidents happen at, you know, many theme parks. Oftentimes they try to, you know.
Haunted house.
Oh, get to that in a second there. Did you want to,
Would you lightning loops?
Free fall.
Free fall.
Okay. Do you remember the story? But we don't know. It's what you heard. What did you hear about free fall, JVL?
Hair. See, now we're talking about a theme park that is not actually scalped. That is about this movie at all.
But that's okay. But go ahead, JVL.
So
the free fall. You were saying the free fall. You're going to kill me for this, by the way.
Scalped.
That's right. Speaking of hair loss, 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Get treated at home. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. They make it easy and deliver your medication every 3 months so you can say goodbye to pharmacy checkout lines and awkward doctor visits. I know what that's like. Find out why Keeps has more than 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatment starts at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. So if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/subbeacon to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/subbeacon. JVL, so what did you think about the documentary then?
So Class Action Park left me cold for the first 70 minutes. It's a 90-minute documentary. And because they just don't have the goods, right? They are not sitting on any special interviews that really blow you out of the water with revelations. They don't have a ton of amazing footage. They seem to have taken, and like the Native American tribe using every part of the buffalo, taken like every single bit of meat out of an MTV special that was shot at Action Park. Who was that, by the way, Victorino?
Ricky Rackman, wasn't it?
Somebody who did not have MTV. I don't know who any of these people are.
You mean the guy that, because they got the special the clip from when MTV went to Action Park. Looked familiar.
Isn't his name like Ricky Rackman or something like that?
Set me back.
So they're really milking that stuff because they don't have a lot of the goods.
Yeah, and like we were saying, a lot of the filler is that animation because it's people's going anecdotes. I remember
Right. So then I was right to say that this left me really cold until the last 20 minutes, and the turn that they make in the final 20 minutes and then really the last 10 minutes was so powerful that I kind of fell in love with the movie, because what you have to understand, and the problem here, I think, is that Sonny is too young for it, is that this is not about Action Park. This is a memoir about Generation X.
That's right. This is because you could do things like that. We just go out to play. Nothing is structured. There's no helicopter parenting. You know, we did whatever we want. One of the guys talks about, like, you know, saying, oh, what did you do over the weekend? Oh, we were checking out the abandoned mental hospital, and somebody else was visiting, you know, the uncle in Freehold. And that's true. I know people who did weird, crazy things like that.
So this is, I mean, the movie starts out and you think to yourself, oh, this could be a story about real estate. It could be a story about crazy, weird New Jersey. It could be a story about divorce. It could be a story, honestly, about how most of capitalism is fraud, and how, you know, every once in a while you get Jeff Bezos, but mostly capitalism gives you Jordan Balfours and Gene Mulvilles. But what it really is at root is about the Gen X versus Boomer generational conflict. And the key to it was really the whole movie is brought together by Chris Cathard, who is, I guess, like a podcast host. He's the members only guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's an actor. He's been in
like two things. I think he's a stand up mostly and a podcast host. And he is the heart of the movie. And what the case he makes at the end, which is why I think the documentary actually earns having it both ways, is that he says, look, we laughed about all this because what else were we going to do? We don't actually think it's healthy. And this is the very key. He says, we felt like we were on our own. We felt like the world was an unsafe place, but it's what we got. So fuck you. And that sums it up perfectly. And this is why you can look at all of the crazy hijinks because it is, as he says, like it's the type of thing that you laugh about with your friends after you've had a couple beers. But when you're talking about with your therapist, you're not laughing at all. And that's the entire basis of the Generation X and Boomer relationship. You know, the Boomers were a terrible, terrible generation who fucked up in every possible way, both as stewards of the country and as parents. And this is what they did. And the Gen Xers basically refused to whine about it. And this is why, you know, they basically just say, look, we got hosed by our parents who sucked. We understand that, but we're not going to whine about it. And we're just going to try to do better for our own kids. And that is why you get to have, just imagine the millennial version of this, right? So the millennial version of this documentary would have none of the, boy, wasn't this shit crazy. It would be all, look how horrible this thing is. Mm. Look at how terrible these people are, right? There would be none of the, because they have to take everything so personally and everything is so serious and they're all about grievance. But Gen X doesn't do grievance. They just sort of accept the unfairness of the world as part of the natural state of man. There.
Fair.
I liked it. I thought it was funny, and the rides were crazy.
We haven't talked about the crazy rides at all.
No, we didn't even take notes. Instead, we got this deep dive into why capitalism is evil. Oh my goodness!
And also, Gen X is good.
Yeah.
So Victorino.
Yes.
Can I project into your brain your big complaint?
I don't think I would have wanted to go to Action Park. By the way, but
here is your big complaint about the movie. They talk on like four separate occasions about how
about all the action and you don't jumping, see it, right?
Girls in bikinis jumping off the Tarzan swing and losing their bikini right. top.
Not one.
And yet in every single one of those video clips, it was like there's not a single boobie.
It was like an animated thing again. Again, it was a crutch for that. For this
As I was watching this, I could hear you saying the word jip.
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm like, oh, come on. I mean, that's the whole point. It was, I thought you know, like some sort of blurry sort of Girls Gone Wild clip, you know, that they would show because they had other clips that were reminiscent of that when they're showing the parties that the, you know, the people who worked there, it was, you know, it was a crazy time. But yeah, so that was a big disappointment. Did not look like a play. I mean, I like the rides. There were a lot of cool rides at Great Adventure. And Great Adventure was dangerous, too. I mean, you were saying this earlier. Not just rides, but you have gangs fighting in there and things
Do
like that.
Do you remember the Lightning Loops death?
Okay, let me get this straight. Lightning Loops in Great Adventure, a guy fell while it was upside down, landed on the rail, and then got run over.
Survived the drop down to the track, only to be killed. Yep. When the coaster ran him over.
I don't know why I'm laughing because it was like, and I can't be true, but that's okay. So I guess because the two of us say this, I guess we've confirmed it then. That's how it happened.
It's real.
Okay, well, the free fall thing we talked about. Okay. And the girl got her hair caught in the thing and that was the end of that scalped. And then Roaring Rapids was another one because a guy was, and there's a Action Park had their own version, their poor man's version of.
It is with like inflatable rafts.
Yeah. Well, inflatable rafts. Not safe, and it's insane. And like he wanted to be like the Colorado River is what he said. Yeah. With like, you know, class four
rapids,
and all of these water rides, it turns out, are simply being powered by spring water that's just around. Nothing's being chlorinated, nothing is being disinfected or cleaned. It's basically pond water. You jump in and there are fish and snakes and whatever.
I love the reference, by the way. I love the reference to Code Brown.
Oh,
like who's doing that? Anyway, Sonny snorts.
Oh, it's New Jersey. That was the thing that was the least surprising.
But again, a lot of those people coming in were from New York. I'm just saying that. And you know what that's like, JVL. They come down. You know, if you ever see, what was the MTV show? Jersey Shore.
From Jersey Shore from New York.
That's exactly right. And they come down, and Action Park is just a hop, skip, and a jump. So, you know, that there was that. But the Haunted Mansion, by the way, and then we'll get back to this, by the way. So this is a tangent since none of us have been to Action Park. Sorry to disappoint our listeners that we didn't live in Moorestown in Tom's River. The Haunted Mansion was the one where you could not bury that story. You could not just say, okay, let's try to make sure nobody really gets it covered because – a lot of people died in that one, and that was a fire in the Haunted Mansion, which was a series of trailers, and there were fake exits. And so,
and the real exits were chained shut. So the real fire exits were chained shut. People tried to get out and couldn't.
I thought that was the end of Great Adventure, but it wasn't. So
yeah, you couldn't kill that thing.
No.
So here's a question for you boys. If we could go back in time to Action Park, which of those rides would you want to give out a try?
Battle Tanks.
That's
the safest one for me.
The story of the guy setting the tennis balls on fire and shooting them out of the battle tanks was pretty amazing.
Whole story, but other than that, I think it would have been okay, maybe. I know it's like they seem like metal struggle. I mean, it's like bumper cars, but a lot more dangerous. The driving thing, what did they say? They can go 50, 60 miles an hour?
Yeah.
On 94?
I like the one that was basically the ski luge on concrete.
Yes.
The Alpine Slide.
Yeah.
Slide.
I was like, oh, that looks like fun.
If people on the chairlifts would come by and then sometimes they drop the...
On purpose. Yeah. This is the thing which really gets to the heart of the cruelty of all this is that it was not the kids who were at Action Park. So if Action Park was the evil twin of Great Adventure, the kids who were there were the evil twins of the people who went to Great Adventure.
That's correct.
Because and it was not basically, hey, we're all in this together. It was like, we're all going to punish each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this is why, as they say in the documentary, there's fights breaking out constantly. And you even had, again, so you had to, for people who have not seen Class Action Park, to do this ride called the, what did we say it was called? The slalom, whatever.
The Alpine slide.
You had to take a chairlift up to the top of the hill and you brought your little slide with you. And people would purposely drop their slides in an effort to hit the people who were on their way down.
Yeah.
Who does right. that? That is psychotic.
That's up there. Those are the North Jersey people.
Very Jersey. This is when the rest of the country thinks about New Jersey. Yeah. When the rest of the country thinks about New Jersey, this is what they think about. They think about this and the Pine Barrens episode of New York, Sopranos.
That's a good one too.
I would say the
in terms of crazy rides, don't forget the Aqua Scoot, which they said was like, she said it was like when you're going so fast, you basically get a colonic out of it. So maybe I try that ride. I don't know.
Not after you did the Ghost Peppers.
After the goes, I could use it. I need a little.
I think my favorite thing about this park is that multiple people drowned in the wave pool.
It's a
wave pool. That's supposed to be like the safest thing you can do.
Well, this is the thing, and this is for somebody like myself who is not a, as you know, a science, engineering, or physics oriented person. Two things. One was that the cannonball loop. Right. Cannonball loop, which is the first insane ride they talk about where people were breaking teeth and getting lacerations going through that. Because, again, the physics of that, like what do they expect the body to do when it goes up and around? You know what I mean? Because you're going to hit, you know, the upper part of that of that tube really hard. And then there was another ride that I thought, the wave pool thing was really interesting because they said it's not like you don't get automatically buoyed. Right by the way,
like freshwater, salt water.
That's right, and so I found that interesting. So that you actually have to sort of like tread every time the water goes up, you know. And so I'm sure a lot of those people were not on anything floatable.
Well, and in the documentary they talk about people getting in there who couldn't swim, and I'm just like, who are you people?
That happens.
Like, believe how me, do you
that happens? I know somebody who went into a friend's pool. A grown person too, by the way, and went down the slide hoping that he wouldn't land too much into the deep end. And of course he did. And then he was like, oh my gosh, I can't swim. I'm drowning. And luckily somebody rescued him, but how embarrassing. Why would you do that? God. Anyway.
People are idiots.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, this is the largest point from Class Action Park is that people are idiots. People are complete idiots.
Oh, the other thing is this, you know, and I mean, they do. They talk about all the action at Action Park, if you know what I mean. Especially, despite in the gross areas.
Sex, you mean?
What?
You mean sex?
How dare you, Sonny? It's a family podcast. And I would see, like, you know, like that it's like the cabin thing with all the smells. It's gross. Okay. But, you know, that was also very common at the time. And I have two anecdotes. One of what both, I think we've talked about this on previous episodes. One is a friend of mine knew a guy who worked at Action Park collecting the tickets. And anytime he saw a girl that he thought was somewhat attractive, he would just say, "Hey, you want to hook up?" And, you know, 99% of the time, you know, they're like, "Ew, gross, get away from me." But when you're collecting that many tickets, the odds are probably they're in your favor.
Only got to work once.
Yeah, no, and so it did, like, you know, like several times. That's the story. Okay. The other one is, you know, the Haunted Mansion, if you went in there, there were people whose jobs were they would dip their hand in ice cold water and then grab you in the dark. Who are they grabbing? And what kind of okay, let's assume the person working there, I'm guessing it's a guy, and that's your job. That's your job is like, what do you get paid to? I get paid for cheap feels. You know, and that's true. That's exactly what happened. That's it. JVL speechless.
I was just curious as to where you were going with that.
No, nowhere. Yeah, I did not work at the Haunted Mansion. You're going to ask
Could have gone a couple different ways.
Every now and then I thought it was a girl, but no, that was not. That was.
So were you guys not taken by the one of the things we should make it the joke in the title of this movie is that the guy almost never paid out the fellow who ran this, Gene Mulville,
had fake insurance.
So he faked his own insurance policy for the park and he made up an insurance company and then made up the insurance policy. And what he did was whenever he just would refuse to settle. So whenever somebody sued him for injury or death, he would just say, "No, we're going to fight this out in court. And I'm just going to pay my lawyer, but I'm not going to pay you. And I'll bear you in legal fees." And then on the occasions when he lost, he would simply refuse to pay the judgment. And because again, he would just believe that people were not going to spend the money to go through the election. Right. Yeah. But there's, I think the former general manager tells about how on a few occasions when people actually went to all the trouble to get the judgment enforced, it would be the U.S. Marshals who show up. And the U.S. Marshals would come to Action Park and go to the business office and literally take the money that was owed to litigants and defendants out of the registers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, capitalism. Yay, capitalism.
All right, Bernie.
Thank you, Elizabeth Warren. Okay. Do we have any other thoughts on Class Action Park? Anything else to share?
I really liked it. I'm surprised you didn't like it more, Vic.
No, I liked it fine. I liked it just fine. I liked it fine. Yeah, definitely. Again,
I guess your childhood wasn't as unhappy as mine.
So no, I there was a lot of projecting there. I think a lot of anger. There was a lot of anger in this episode. But I do agree. I mean, you know, the 80s were like, you know, nobody cared. You know, we biked without helmets. You know, I mean, our kids think that's crazy. Who does that? You know, but who did? Who are, you know, we didn't wear seatbelts. You know, again, people think this is extremely crazy. Yet here we are. So I appreciated that. But again, they there was a lot of anger in that documentary because part of it is, yeah, we got to do it. And then the other part is, how are we allowed to do this? We shouldn't have been, you know, there's a little bit of that, I thought. But no, it's fine. But definitely, it was definitely a trip down memory lane and with a very dark turn with the, you know, they obviously were able to interview the family. So of the kid who died. So anyway, okay, that's it.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Note, okay. Corrections and shout outs. Just thank you again to a lot of listeners who continue to send their condolences and mass cards for me. Shout outs to Kishore Jayabalan and also Charlotte and Craig Reineck. They're the ones I finally found out. They're the ones who sent me the Palm Cookbook, which is really actually very, very good. And Reineck is clean corner in German, by the way. Also, Canadian listener and friend Ian Brody tells us we talked about the Canadian currency last episode. And he explained, you were right. I think Sonny mentioned the loonie. What was that, JVL? And one of you mentioned the Looney, and maybe it was JVL, and he says, when we ended the paper dollar and replaced it with a dollar coin, the side without the queen had a loon in it. Mostly, still mostly does, so the name Looney stuck. You learn something every day, every episode.
And that's one to grow on.
That's one to grow on. Okay. Another great thing from the 80s. That is all the time we're giving to this amazing episode. Wait till next week. You know, it's just a teaser because obviously we know what's coming up. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
It's funny, Vic. It's funny that you hadn't gone because Beth and I were trying to guess before the show if Vic had gone. We assume. I mean, I just assumed JBL had never gone to this place.
To what?
But to Action Park.
Oh
to,
yeah, no. It's, class action. It's strictly geographical, though. Yeah. If we lived up in Morris,
it wasn't an objection. It wasn't a moral objection.
We wouldn't have known. I don't think we would have known, especially as kids. I think you just show up, and then I would have been terrified.
Even as a 12-year-old boy, I held every single person associated with Action Park in utter contempt.
Was it because of the commercials? Or you just...
Yeah, I could just tell. I knew exactly who those people were. They're the people who thought that rules didn't apply to them. This is, you know what? Here, let me circle back and get a little angrier here. The entire
a great pitch session, by the way,
of Action Park, which is where you make the rules, was to me, as a young lad... deeply offensive because my job, as I saw it, was to follow the rules of all of the authority figures to the utmost in order to get all of the achievements and go further than anybody else and then get all of the winnings and prizes afterwards. And the idea that these bums and with their
degenerates.
The absolute with their marijuana cigarettes and their what? Cans of beer.
Steins of beer there, at the Oktoberfest.
Out there doing whatever the fuck they wanted, and that they would none of that would go on their permanent record. That they would somehow be able to go to college and then get into medical school and then have a job later on. I found it so deeply offensive. I wanted to murder all of them.
Well, you know that those people all got engraved invitations to come to Georgetown, right? Like if you went to Clash of Action Park, you made it through. You made it out. You went down the Alpine slide.
They went from the Alpine slide to Del Barton to Georgetown.
Right. What time is it, Vic? I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine.